Live from Motor City Comic Con, this is episode 152 of Drunk on Comics.
Maybe you should wait till I hit record before you snag my little intro.
I see that thing recording all the time. All right, guys, welcome. This is last day of the con here, which is why my voice is completely shot. I'm Derek.
I'm Matt.
I'm Tony.
And I'm Jay.
Jay who?
I'm Jay, the Jedi Ross of an Elegant Weapon podcast.
Yeah, so Jay's sitting in joining us today. I want to say first.
Holy shit, this has a lot of electrolytes.
A lot of electrolytes and how much rum?
equal parts. We're in
dire need of electrolytes.
You got to have a little bit of the hair of the dog that bit you to make it through here today.
I actually was just now starting to get my hangover again. Like, I have offset hangovers. Like, I can wake up and feeling fine. 2 hours later, I'm like, fuck.
That's just your diabetes, Tony. I think you need an insulin shot.
Actually, I think the biggest problem is you actually sobered up 2 hours later, and now you're getting the hangover. I think that's probably more legit. So, but
the cure to hangovers is comic books. So
and beer.
And weed.
We're here.
All right, who wants to kick it off or off the shelf this week?
You know what? Let's start off with Secret Wars number 2.
Go for it,
because,
guys.
Because as you'll probably hear from us in the coming weeks, we're going to keep talking about Secret Wars. It's kind of a big event for Marvel. Last week was the kind of intro into it.
Spoilers.
Oh, yeah. Spoiler alert. If you haven't read it, you know, cover your ears and go la, 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 la. But last week, Jonathan Hickman kicked off the series with getting us to the flashpoint where now we have Battle World, and all the heroes are dead or missing, or you know, it was very hard for me to really care that any of the heroes have died with my air quote hands that you can't see as you're listening, because I know that they're just gonna, you know, get reformed in this new world. Number 2 here, written and designed by Jonathan Hickman, artist Isab Ribic. And colors by Ives Sovakina?
Close enough.
Okay. It was really cool in the way that Marvel is really good at doing those what-if worlds. What if Doom was a god-king of Doomguard, which is a mashup of Asgard and Latveria? And what if his minister of religion was Doctor Strange and his minister of science was Valerie Richards? And what if he had a whole bunch of Thors who were basically the cops of these realms? So that's what's setting this up as you go, oh, this is Battle World, but it's just this another what-if world, and how is this going to play out? But it does a really cool job of setting things up. They find the raft, which was something that was supposed to save them from these incursions and let at least a couple people survive. And
well, they didn't find the right raft.
Though. But yeah, you're thinking this is going to be the raft that Reed Richards and Black Panther are on. But instead, it's the raft that Thanos and the rest of the Cabal and evil Reed Richards from the Ultimate Universe are on.
Matt, I got a question for you, because I haven't gotten to read mine yet. But correct me, wasn't the raft also a prison?
Yes.
In the 616.
I think they are recycling the word raft a little bit.
Yeah, maybe raft can mean a couple things. It doesn't just need to be prison.
It could be the raft, and there's like a turtle with some size and that looks a lot like Elektra.
Well, it could be the raft. With a W.
Ooh.
Or like it could be something horsemen? Cooler than what you guys are saying.
Maybe it's the bath.
No,
okay, that's stretching too far. No. So, you know, as we'll continuously update you on what's happening here with Secret Wars, it's intriguing. I'm real happy with being entertained by the book. The art is beautiful.
Is amazing.
When he did, and he's great at doing Thor. I read the God of Thunder series that Jason Aaron wrote at Ribic started, and can't complain with the art in it. So,
now Matt, I mean, you mentioned though that you're not worried because you know that these characters are going to be recreated one way, shape, or form, but. When I read issue 1, Tony and I talked about it, and I guess for me, there's actually a concern. There's a worry for me because there's certain characters that I like what their origins are. I like what their backstory is, and that is potentially going to die. While the character may live on, their history may not. So, I mean, do you have any of that?
I'm not too concerned. I think change is fine. I think some of the changes that they'll make are probably to fix characters that are just kind of lackluster already. I think they're characters that they're really solid with. that I care about the most are going to be fine. Doom's going to be fine because he's the best hero that the Marvel Universe has.
Do you think they'll give him the unicorn that he's riding on your t-shirt?
I've got this awesome shirt of Doom riding a unicorn surrounded by a giant rainbow. The visual is amazing. And yes, I think he will get a unicorn. He's wearing all white armor now. And he is a god king. He sits on Yggdrasil, the world tree. And so that's pretty cool. He could have a unicorn if he wants one.
All right, cool. All
right, who's next?
I'm talking Walking Dead this week. And this is, what issue are you on now? 141. Robert
Derek,
Kirkland.
I don't know how well your memory is, but you reviewed Walking Dead last year at Motor City.
Did I really?
Yep.
See, it's timing. Kirkman must know when to put out a good issue. So, yeah.
Once a year.
Yeah, so Robert Kirkman, writer Charlie Adlard on pencils, and Stefano Gaudiano on inks on this. Cliff Rathburn on gray tones. The reason I wanted to talk about this one is The Walking Dead's consistently been a good book. There have been times when there's a little bit too much exposition and it's drawing out. You know, I mean, the big event last year, it just seemed to me there was too much in there. They're trying to force a little bit too much story. But Negan is back, and at the end of the last issue, his prison cell was not properly locked. And so, you know, he's inside. You know,
that's a problem when you don't have, like, the state officiating, overseeing body of prison cells, like, going through and making sure that those locks are all up to date. You know, when the world goes to hell, you know, there's going to be lots of little mistakes like that.
No, it's a lack of taxes, really. Is what
that's true.
But this issue, you know, because I'm sitting there waiting for this issue to come out going, oh, what the hell is he going to do? And I liked what's going on in this book a lot just because of the fact that Kirkman's got it now where he is really just fucking your brain right now. Because the whole time in this, you're like, what's he going to do? What's he going to do? Rick gets back, and Negan literally sat there in his cell with the door wide open waiting for him. And then he starts fucking with fucking with Rick, saying, now you're just going to wonder, what did I do? Did I rig the wires in your house that'll burn down at night? Do I have traps all over the place? But no, I didn't. But you're going to wonder. And this is, the thing I liked about this is that for the first time, because you're really not dealing with zombies, you're really not dealing with survival anymore in this book, it's actually brought a level of fear back into the comic that hasn't been there for a long time. You know, and it's all becoming psychological now. Now the survival aspect is more about, you know, what's actually going on with people and their interactions, not actually, you know, the Walking Dead.
Well, that's what we always said before, like the zombies were the least things that were bad about this world. It was the humans.
Yeah.
And having that come back. And just Negan is probably one of the top five badass villains that I've ever seen in a comic.
Sorry, give me a quick spoilery review, because I haven't read Walking Dead since Negan came into it. And spoilers.
Major spoilers
Glenn
here.
Met his unfortunate demise.
And people that watch the show that don't want to hear about what could potentially happen, you definitely need to close your ears at this point. But Negan actually ball bat upside the head with...
that's the last issue I read.
Yeah, with Glenn.
So what? Just quickly...
So quickly, they ended up capturing him, and they put him in prison. They did not kill him.
Okay.
So he's been sitting in there. They're taking care of him. They won't kill him because they want to be the people that are actually doing good.
So have they found another prison then?
I don't know if they built one or what. I don't remember off the top of my head, but I killed too many brain cells to remember all the details. But the interesting part is that Rick says we can't be those people that are killing other people now. We have to move above that. Where, here's the big spoiler from this issue, over in Maggie's encampment, they actually hang the guy who tried to kill her. So this, and I wanted to bring this up, I wouldn't normally spoil the end of this book like this, except for the fact that this double page spread by Adlard is one of the best perspectives I've seen in this book, because a lot of times he does the big spreads and they're great, but it's kind of just an overall scenery chewing kind of situation. This one actually shocked me.
I just love the color scheme that they use in that book. It's been really consistent.
So anyway, Walking Dead actually shocked me again this week. So, you know, where I was feeling a little complacent. I was enjoying it, but cheers to these guys for kicking my ass and giving me something I didn't expect.
Tony, what do you got?
If you guys are not reading Astro City 23, you guys definitely should be, because what happened the first two 22 Astro Cities, I have no clue. But
23rd one's a charm.
Yeah, 23 is a good number for a city. But this series in and of itself is just fucking amazing, hands down. I have not read a single issue that was not just written up to par on Wicked. It's kind of like a saga type book, except for this does involve superheroes. However, these superheroes are real. They age like real people. They come out of the woodwork. But then you also get that kind of nostalgia, the copying of other things. Like in the first panel, opens up with, you know, the first family, aka pretty much a Fantastic Four. And I love seeing, because I love Fantastic Four, but whenever other people take their, I don't know, view on them, because obviously it's pretty much what copying and...
Well, yeah, I mean, you've got massive copyright infringement if all of a sudden, you know, you've got...
Well, not copyright infringement, but like, what, kind of parody a little bit?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, DC has done it too, where they have kind of like a Marvel Universe. Marvel, a couple... maybe a year or two ago, did a whole Justice League thing as well. But this, in and of itself, having just some of those people, the Samaritan, who's pretty much like a Superman, you get that feeling of, okay, I know this character, but then you realize these people are more real than the Wolverines, that when they die in this book, they're dead. And this one in itself, starting a new story arc with, and I just love this cover, this gorilla guy who... his name sticks. He just wants to play drums. He wants to be a drummer in a band. And fortunately, because he's a talking gorilla, people think he's a superhero. He's a metahuman. He's a this and that. And
so racist, you know. Gorilla starts talking, you automatically think that they're a superhero.
No, and seriously, this follows a story of almost like the fanboy, the person that wants to be a superhero, except for this person has the ability to be one. He's coming out of Gorilla Mountain, which... okay, that was kind of easy to come up with, but...
it's easy.
Not
name
a real stretch there.
Yeah, but having him have a... where, to him, they're just talking gorillas. They've learned to be defensive for when other people attack their colony, which is in Antarctica, up in the clouds where no one can really find them. It's a tropical paradise, but... so to him, knowing how to fight, knowing how to do gorilla karate and all that, is just normal.
Wait, what? Gorilla karate?
Yeah, gorilla karate.
Okay. Is that different than regular karate?
Yeah, because you got to be a gorilla to do it.
It's kind of like spider food.
Is it spider food, Jake? Is that like when they, like, you've seen the clip where, I want to say it was like back in the 70s or 80s, they taught that chimpanzee how to do karate and break boards and stuff, put him in the little gi. Which, I don't know, that's a little offensive to me if you're going to dress the monkey up like that. Cause
yeah, this monkey is just being a regular monkey that has a hat and wants to
be a person.
First off,
guys, it's an ape, not a monkey. Monkeys have tails. Thank you. Just like Curious George has no tail, he's an ape. Please fix this.
Well, he's a gorilla. So, McGilla Gorilla, no, but there's a burning building. He goes in and swoops in and saves everyone, but... he's just more or less being a regular human. When the superhero team comes and wants them to join, he's just like, I just came here to play drums. When all of a sudden these people find out that he's there and wants to kidnap him because they can sell him because he's a talking gorilla, he realizes maybe he just can't be a drummer. Maybe he's going to need to be joining a superhero team, thinking, I would never have done this before. I don't know why they'd want me. Not realizing his potential. And when you really read it, you can then put yourself on this gorilla. You can say, I never felt like I could be a hero. Just so happens, and so this is a person that came from a society of he was just a normal being. Being in the real world and being a talking gorilla, he can actually...
so it's more about what it means to be a hero rather than, hey, look at us, we're all superheroes.
Yeah, and this is the first story arc, because it ends with him then realizing maybe he should... give the little secret card from the superhero squad that he got, you know, a call. Maybe he can be that. And I don't know. This was a really good starting of the story arc, but I just can't talk enough about just this book in general. The art is fucking amazing. And just the writing by Busick. Hands down.
Who did the art on that one again, Tony? I'm sorry.
Brett Anderson. They've been doing this. It's Anderson and Busick. That's been doing it.
Now, because I know I read the first one and I loved it, but for whatever reason I didn't keep going on it. I may have read the first couple. But weren't they pretty much just one shots? Like, you know, I mean, it's one at the beginning at least.
No, it's an entire world.
Right.
There's different story arcs that will. Okay, the first couple of books were kind of setting the tone of this, this, and this, but then 5 issues in, you go back to that character that they reintroduced you. You get a sense of all these different things going on, but each book they try to focus on one thing. So this one being the hero rise or whatever is that. But they mention other characters that they've created, and you get a sense of a connecting world.
Has Alex Ross done all the covers?
Yes. And
they're always, every time you show me one of the Astro City covers, I'm like, that's really nice. That's pretty.
One other question, though, for you, Tony, because, I mean, you took a break for a while. But you had no problem following along with where things were. I mean, anything that was in there, they give you enough background on stuff, or did you feel like...
No, because that's why, as you were saying, like, you can read a single issue and love it for just that issue. If you read them all, you get an even greater sense of what this world is that they created. I've never seen writing just as well as they put it within this book.
Cool. Yeah, I might have to jump back on board with that one because I'm hearing lots of people just raving about this book. So, cool.
That's what I got. Jay, did you actually read anything?
I haven't read anything directly off the shelf in the last 2 weeks.
What the fuck you been doing?
I've been preparing for my Motor City adventure.
Cool. All right, guys. Well, that'll wrap it up for Off the Shelf, which was brought to you by Motor City Comic Con. Should I say when and where?
Here, now.
Yeah. Thanks, Matt.
You're welcome.
All right. Guys, we want to do a little news?
Sure.
All right. Some of the big news that came out this week, and big spoiler here, which was spoiled before the comic even hit the shelves, Marvel released who the identity of the new female Thor was, which I've been reading this since it started. I've actually gotten hooked on a Thor book. And Marvel went, hey, here you go. You don't need to go buy my freaking book.
Yeah.
That pissed me off.
You know, but this isn't the first time they did it. They did this when Captain America died at the end of Civil War. They had it all in the newspapers. They also did it when Charles Xavier gets killed by Cyclops. And they actually had a picture of the panel of Cyclops killing Xavier and the Avengers versus X-Men story arc. So I am not surprised that Marvel's publicity people continue to spoil their own books. And it's really not going to stop until the readers take a stand.
Yeah, well, I mean, luckily enough, I got a text that, which... For us doing what we do, where we need to kind of keep up on stuff, I got a text saying, stay off the internet. Marvel released who Thor's identity is. And I'm like, fuck off. Seriously.
Anyone here reading Thor?
Got one.
Did you guess it correctly?
No.
No? Okay.
Did you hear about it before Wednesday when the book came out?
Oh, yeah.
So, thanks, Marvel. You know, I mean, like, we try and put at least a 24-hour, like, you know, spoiler, you know, kind of a time frame out there before we'll talk about anything, at least online. That's our own choice. But, I mean, yeah, once the book's out, it's out. But I don't get it. It doesn't seem to me to make good business sense.
People are still going to buy. I think their idea is that if I tell you this character is going to die or that this is the big reveal issue, collectors will flock to that book and it'll be a collector item for them.
Everybody knew that the identity was going to be revealed that issue anyway, though.
And everyone should have known who it was going to be, like I did, but.
Yeah.
Girl Thor.
We have recordings of it. That's who I guessed it would be.
All right.
At the time.
It kind of feels like a sad example, yet again, of the comics following the movie universe. So.
Yeah, well,
not necessarily plot line, but just, we got this character that's now known generally in the public more than anything. We got to get her back in the book.
Well, we're not going to tell you here today who it is, but go out and pick that up or just get on the internet.
I thought we already said who it was.
No, you haven't.
No, we haven't.
No, we haven't.
We could leave this spoiler free.
Yeah. So let's leave it at that. We'll leave it at
first.
Let me just talk about that. Same thing just happened with Batman.
Yes. You didn't know that was Bruce Wayne?
Spoiler, his parents are dead.
Yeah. Well, Batman's not Bruce Wayne anymore. And it was quite spoiled by, I'm not going to just slander the site, but Mr. Capullo was very unhappy with this site I'm looking at right here. Because they went ahead and just shot it out there. And Capullo was pissed. He went on a Twitter tirade.
Yeah, I would be too. I mean, as a creator, you know.
Well, there's a lot of when Bendis came out, or had Iceman come out, that got out a week before. And he was pissed that they spoiled what he was building up to. And I haven't read that comic book, but I remember hearing a lot of the controversy about it. But even then, he wanted to be for the fans and the readers that are reading this book, who would get it a little bit more than just the random people saying, Iceman's gay now, like, and how that came about.
Yeah, and just let people who aren't following the book make judgments about comic books
totally based off of their own opinions on the subject rather than actually reading the book.
You know, there was one of the cool things, too, is that there was it was about a year ago, and I honestly don't remember which book, but I know it was a Marvel book, and we had a written review that went up on our site, and so I tagged the creators in it and whatnot, and they sent a private message saying, hey, can you slightly reword something, because we don't want to give away the secret at the end. And I was like, absolutely. Mm-hmm. You know, so I get it, and you know, that's kind of one of those things. And we didn't really give anything away, but there was enough that could lead people, mm-hmm. and they just really wanted that last three pages to not be mentioned at all.
I just feel like Marvel, though, seriously just wants to spoil all their books before people buy them.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't get it, but this is not a spoiler because we don't know any of the synopsis of it, but Frank Miller is teaming up with Brian Azzarello for the final section of the Dark Knight trilogy.
Yeah, Frank Miller's going to help write it, but he is not going to do the art for it.
No, Capullo.
Yeah,
himself. Oh, that's so stoking.
I'm excited for it. Both of those, the Dark Knight and the Dark Knight Return Strikes Again. The Dark Knight Returns and the Dark Knight Strikes Again are two of my favorite DC graphic novels. So.
Did they announce that Capullo is actually doing the art?
It's not set in stone yet, but right now there's several people working together on it, and then we don't know exactly who's going to like sit down and draw this and sit down, but Capullo is involved in the designing of how the book's going to look. Okay. Whether he ends up being the primary artist or not, I'm not sure, but there's a little, they've almost put together, like, I think there's five or six of them, and they're a little brain trust.
Yeah, and I don't know, I mean, because unfortunately, Frank Miller is starting to get up there in years, so I don't know how much he, you know, is actually able to draw. But I'm hoping that he actually has a good hand in that, in the look and the feel of the book, because I mean, I think his vision.
I think he will. He's very hands on for his projects, and so I think he will probably meticulously proof and okay every section of it. So I think it's going to be good.
Yeah. Did you guys hear that the Mallrats sequel has been confirmed?
Yes, Small Brats.
Yes. Small Brats. I think one of the most fun things that Kevin Smith kind of alluded to is that there will be a Stan Lee battle. And he potentially a bloody battle with Stan Lee. I got to see if I can find his tweet again here. But yeah, here it is. It said, it's Mall or Nothing, 20 years in the making, 113 pages full old friends, new jokes, and a bloody battle with Stan Lee. So
I'm looking forward to it. Yeah. I'll watch it.
Yeah.
Stan Lee just did a little short film with Kevin Smith and company about the cameo actor. About it's real good. Yeah. Just YouTube Stan Lee cameo acting.
It's fantastic.
And have a good laugh. So
yeah. Other movie news, Tony. A trailer came out this week.
Yeah, truly, truly horrendous trailer.
Oh no, it's for Josie and the Pussycats too, isn't it?
No, it's for the most convoluted shit I've ever seen. Like, I had high hopes for Gemini Holograms. Like, going back to childhood, and it's weird, a guy saying that they really like a chick show, but the music was badass. If you re-listen to some of that shit on YouTube, wow. The Misfits.
It was sandwiched
rocking.
In, though. You had to watch it. It's Transformers, Gem, G.I. Joe type thing, you know?
And so when the new books came out, we picked them up to give them a shot to see if nostalgia will carry on. And their new direction they did, it was like a really phenomenal fucking book. And
yeah, the books,
the
are
colors
great.
Were bright and everything. So we're thinking this movie is going to have it all. Then they did well with the comic books, and then you watch the trailer, and you find out that it is a generic. Band starts, all of a sudden the main singer goes off on her solo career, realizes she needs her friends, and comes back and saves the day.
You know what? Actually, it's not a Josie and the Pussycats 2, it's Crossroads 2. And Britney Spears will have a cameo.
Do you not think they'd learn their lesson by now? Like, especially now in this day and age where everybody is so precise and all the fans are so particular about things being, you know, like they were, they've literally done... There is nothing similar to this whatsoever except for the title.
I think my favorite meme I saw so far was there's the cartoon Gem. She's looking into Synergy's screen, and she's crying, and there's the picture of the girl from the new movie.
But none of the no misfits, no Synergy, no superheroes, no changing. It's literally a story about it. It's got nothing to do with Gem and the Holograms.
It may be American Idol style. Probably too. I have no idea.
But I don't get it.
The sad thing is, I'll go see this fucking movie.
Will you really?
Yes.
No, you're, this is why nothing changes.
Yeah.
Because you still go and they make their money back, or they lose. The problem is the game is rigged that Hollywood producers, even if they lose money, then they can use it as a tax break. So, I mean, that's why Uwe Boll got to make so many crappy movies, because he literally was a tax dodge in Germany. So there's financial business games that they play with our childhood memories, and again, it's not going to stop till we rise up against them. So I'm looking at you guys. Revolution starts today.
Potential good movie news, though, was the New Mutants.
Okay.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That's cool.
That got announced, which, you know, it's kind of like, I was surprised to see that more than like an X-Force or some of these other ones.
Yeah, I thought X-Force was going to be the next big one that they're coming out with.
They're talking about it, but you know, actually, if they're going to do an X-Force, I would much rather see like the new 2008 X-Force, you know, that the Rick Remender shit that was so dark.
Phantom X and Deadpool.
Yeah, X-23.
Mm-hmm. You need Cable. Cable's X-Force.
No, it won't come onto cable until after it's been in the movies.
Oh, okay. I guess so.
Well, there's a lot of talk that Deadpool, Ryan Reynolds, might show up in Apocalypse.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So they and I know it's been said before, but Hugh Jackman is adamant that he's done. This is the last Wolverine. Will be the third in his Wolverine trilogy.
You know, it actually would make sense, though, that Deadpool starts appearing in every other movie, or at least just on the movie posters, if nothing else. So,
well, I'm looking forward to the New Mutants movie. More Olivia Munn. That'll be great.
Yeah. Fuck you. I'm still pissed about that casting for her.
I think it's
Psylocke.
Perfect. I don't know how you can't think it's abs. It's like she's off the page. She jumped off the page. I'm Psylocke.
Look at her.
Looks wise, great. That's fantastic. As soon as she opens her mouth, it's done. So... Yeah.
That's right, there's not enough thespians in comic book movies, are there?
Hugh Jackman?
I don't know, Sir Patrick Stewart?
Yeah.
Sir Ian McKellen?
I was saying there's not enough.
Yeah, yeah, so, yeah, we need to keep that level up there.
Sir Michael Fassbender?
Yeah. Tony, did you see the giant Millennium Falcon that some dude created out of
Legos? Dude, that was fucking balls. That was... Yeah. So amazing.
Yeah. This one, if you guys are interested, we saw it on comicbook.com. So, I mean, you just look up Lego Millennium Falcon on their site. It is... Jay, have you seen this yet?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, yeah. I mean, just absolutely ridiculous on there. But
crazy detail.
One other little news note here is that Oni Press is actually getting their second big screen movie coming out. Cool. With the first being Scott Pilgrim. And this is going to be The Call of the City. They got a $30 million budget for this, which
that's
is
pretty
huge.
Huge.
Yeah.
Good for an indie book.
I have no idea how much of it is going to Charlize Theron, but she is going to be the star of this movie. So I think with her name and that kind of a budget, Oni could have a lot of people hearing more about their books.
Well, I think there's a lot more smaller publishers that are trying to save up as much as they can to actually make one of their books be the next big hit. I mean, they're looking at Marvel and DC just raking in the cash. They're like, we have something, we can make it. Right. Which will be great once more of them start, you know, getting more money, you know. If publishers could maybe, I don't know, raise money to get their books out there, it'd be great.
You mean like Archie Comics using Kickstarter?
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you guys hear about this one? Yeah.
This makes me sad.
Okay, here's the thing. So Archie, for people that don't know, Archie started a Kickstarter project where what they're doing is they're trying to raise funds to launch three new titles. Basically, there's a lot of people that are for it. There are a lot of people that are against it. It's one of these things where they're sinking a lot of money into the new Archie number one, which is going to be written by Mark Waid and drawn by Fiona Staples, which you should just be able to say, hey, when this hit stands, we're going to have all the money we need.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if it's because, you know, they got into a deal with, it was like Target and Walmart to do distribution there, and that bumped up their production so fast that they are hurting for money and that's why they need it. I don't know. But now you have comic book, local comic shops that are upset because they feel that they're having money taken out of their pockets because Archie's going direct
to the consumer. It bugs me because Kickstarters are supposed to be there for those who can't get the fundings, the corporate fundings. I don't have a marketer who can go sit down with a big publisher and say, give me some money. But Archie clearly does. They can have those business ties and raise money the more conventional way for
He's
projects.
He's got a TV show coming. Yeah. They're making Riverdale.
Kickstarter is supposed to be for like guys or gals have no connection and are really, you know, trying to put something out there.
So it's
really branding. I think that Archie is too big a brand. It'd be like Coke saying, hey, or Pepsi saying, we want to bring back Crystal Clear Pepsi, but only if we get a Kickstarter that'll fund it. It's like, no, Pepsi, you can afford it. I really think Archie can.
Well, Matt, you might be happy to find out. I just looked up some info, and they have officially canceled the Kickstarter campaign.
Have they really?
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
That's news in real time.
Yeah, so now this does raise a question, though, because you've got books like Rocket Girl from Brandon Montclair and Amy Reeder, that book was Kickstarted, but it was released as an indie as an Image title. Now, what they did was they basically had some Kickstarter exclusives, but then I got my book in the mail the day before it hit stands.
So,
but you know what? I went on and supported. I wanted to do it. I think if it's done properly, I think that's fine. I think it, in more of a creator-owned sense, I think you're right, because it can help gain awareness. Whereas Archie itself, you're right, that is a big brand.
But, I mean, the creator-owned thing is a big point, because if something like Archie, the rights to those characters are owned by a big multi, you know, probably national corporation, and they're going to make all the money off of what other people draw and write for that book. But if I was that writer, artist, and I wanted to actually own the property, the publishing company might not actually give me the money to make that book. So the Kickstarter then becomes a way for me to own my work. And for that, even if you are a fairly big name in the industry, I can see that being supportive. So,
you know,
it's controversial, but I think it's worth discussing. And at the least, it's Kickstarter, so if people don't like it, they don't have to give to it. So
I'm surprised that they pulled it, but you know, I guess one of the things though with a Kickstarter is that, you know, if you wanted to do it for exclusives, I think that would be a cool way of doing it. I mean, you know, if you wanted to do something where you could get your hands on original art or get drawn into something or whatever, I don't have a problem with that. You know, but then again, there's another great thing that a lot of Kickstarters do, though, too, is they have the retailer bundles where, hey, here's 25, here's 50, and it's at a significantly reduced, and they can get a hold of these exclusives, too. So I don't know what the rewards were, but I think there are good ways to use Kickstarter and still help out the retailer at the same time. But anyway.
Can I, I'm going to screw up your structure. Because this Elegant Weapon has no strength. I'm sitting here. We had talked about, I was going to give a little overview of Convergence, because I know I don't think you guys have been reading. I don't, maybe you meant to do that at Off the Shelf. But
I tried to say, hey, have you read anything?
Yeah, I clued in after, but, you know, I'm still full from dinner and coma. And, man, that was a night. But, yeah, I know none of you guys have read any Convergence at all, right?
No, I have not.
Well, Convergence, for anyone who doesn't know and doesn't live on the planet, is kind of DC's attempt to amalgamify. Is that the right word? Did I make up another word?
Tonyism from Jay?
I just start writing down all these words I make up. so basically, I'll give you guys a quick overview of what's been happening with Convergence. What's happened here is what they're trying to do is bring the new 52 and the old universe and, you know, combine them and make everything kind of make a general sense again. Not that it doesn't make sense. I'm a huge fan of the New 52. Always have been. The writing that's gone on in a lot of the series has just been spectacular, especially Batman. You know, the stuff that's been going on. Snyder's just genius. So basically what has happened is a couple of the books have started out back in the old universe, and they're ignoring the New 52. So they've gone back. And what
do they
give
you?
What
a
are we
label?
Giggling at? What are you?
Do they give you a label?
You're distracting me.
They give you a label to let you know which universe you're in.
No, but you get the impression here. So we start off Batman and Robin number one, and we are at the point where
Batman's dead. I thought
that's why we're
okay.
It's converging. Batman and Robin number one convergence, and all of a sudden we find ourselves at the time when he has just gotten Damian Wayne. So we're like, oh, we're back when there's Damian Wayne. Then what happens to the world is all of a sudden all these domes come out of nowhere and they encompass each major city. Each major city's dome comes down and that city's superhero loses their powers. So they're all trapped in their cities. Batman's trapped in Gotham.
So Batman doesn't have any money and...
He's the only one who's okay. Because he's got his gadgets and stuff, but he can't help everybody because all his gadgets are in Gotham where he's stuck, right? So everybody's lost their powers, and just a year goes by, and they're stuck in these domes, and most of the population of the world has been like, all right, I guess they're learning to live with it. There's a few particular heroes who can't, and they're like, this isn't right, something's wrong. Wally West in particular, he knows there's something screwed, so he's trying to get out of this dome, and he just won't quit. All of a sudden, the domes lift, and they've got their powers back. But once the domes have lifted, all the universes start combining. So one dome lifts, they leave the city, and they realize, this isn't right, this is weird. So for an example...
It's like a battle world?
It's like a battle world. Yes, it is. It's very battle world.
I was waiting for that. Someone in the next room applaud for you, Tony.
But there are very specific tasks. You have to face this person. You have to face this person.
So it's a video game.
Kind of.
So it's
it almost is.
So it's a Capcom version of the New 52.
Kind of. So you're going to have, you may have Aquaman fighting Aquaman. You may have, you know, all this kind of weird stuff going on. Right now, the New 52 Aquaman is in the old universe trying to make the other universe's Mira his queen. Because he doesn't have her in the other universe. And he's like, oh my god, you're here. You have to be my queen. Come to my universe. So there's all this crazy kind of...
So is there going to be like Fishhook Aquaman coming back? Like with the long hair?
That would be cool, man. Yeah, there is the potential of that, that he could show up. They're just throwing everything in there. So as far as where it's going, we're not quite sure yet. It's very up in the air. But that's where we're at right now. It's really weird.
I think we've talked about this. I don't know if we talked about it on the air, but do you guys think that there's any collusion between DC and Marvel that these things are coming out at the same time?
Isn't that crazy?
Or is it just happenstance?
Collusion or like how Fantastic Four mythology says they got started that, hey, we're talking about doing this. Well, we got to do that too now. That they're just copying each other because they want in on those sales.
Well, yeah, but with the whole thing, though, for as far back as these books have to be planned to get put out on time, there's no way.
Maybe there's collusion.
I don't know, though. Like, Hickman, for doing all this stuff,
Incursions, Wars. Not
well,
convergences.
No,
incursions.
Yeah, but incursion, convergence, whatever.
Incursions.
For Secret Wars, he started that ages ago. And he knew that that's what he was building up to ages ago, and it's seen in his book. So I don't know how much collusion could be there.
I don't think there's any. I think it's pure coincidence that both universes were so muddled up at the time, and there was a lot of attention, you know, from the fans saying, this is making no sense, especially Marvel. Marvel's been a mess. How many X-books, Ultimate, this. It was so confusing.
I just want to know when Batclaw is going to come into one of them.
Dark Claw.
Dark Claw was awesome.
So I think it's just coincidence that at the same time they needed to clean things up.
Yeah.
Cool.
And it might, honestly, I would say that it's probably the movies that are causing the most of this, because we want to have a cinematic universe that makes sense and has a good continuity, but the comic books then need to support that. So, damn Hollywood.
Yeah.
What do we got next?
I don't know. Do you guys find anything here at the convention that you want to talk about?
I found one of my goals for the convention was to find some kind of comic book that had historical value, like was based off of historical events, and while reading it would get dates and names of people that I could then use. As I'm working on becoming a high school history teacher, I want to be able to use things like comic books in my classroom. So I found Yi Sun Shin, Warrior and Defender. It is a story about a Korean Navy officer who fought back the Japanese invasions in 1592. And the story, or the writer.
This is all true stuff.
It's all based off of the historical events. Obviously, when you know you're writing a book, the history and the art don't have to match up exactly right. The idea is that you read this; it's a really good story. You're compelled by it, but then you go out and you actually read the history and find out more about who this person actually was. So they're all based off of real battles and real people. But
like
there's.
Star Wars.
Yeah, like Star Wars was based off a long, long time ago. Writer Henri Compline, artist Giovanni Timpano, and colorist Adriana De Los Santos. Real good book. I got through. I've picked up 1 through 4 here at the con, and I'm through issue 1, and real happy with the art. Real happy with. Just kind of some of the things I already know about the history going, yep, that's pretty cool. Oh, look at the Japanese already have some firearms fighting the Koreans who pretty much are still using bow and arrow. So really happy with that purchase. And
hey,
also
Matt, quick question on that, because I mean, I'm just looking at it and the actual physical quality of the book is great. But who's the publisher?
The publisher.
Or is it self-published?
I think it's self-published.
Man?
Yeah. Go ahead and take a look through it. Right. I do know that they are trying to... they've got... the next run is... they've got 4 issues for the next run. And they're trying to get a double-sized final issue funded through Kickstarter. It ends on May 24th. But if you look for yisinshin.com on Kickstarter, you should be able to find them. And it's YISOONSHIN.
And actually, this is pretty cool. I'm glad that you brought this up because people that are interested, we might be able to help spread the word. In the fine print here, it says, we are actively seeking to sell publishing rights, foreign and domestic. So go to their website, and if you're interested, you can talk to them. But no, the physical quality of that book is amazing.
One of the things I was saying was the paper quality for it and stuff really feels thick.
Yeah,
right? And just the art, the colors are phenomenal. Art's great, tells great stories, and I just can't complain about it. I'm really hooked. I can't wait to read the next 3 that I have.
Yeah.
Anyone else get anything that they...
I have 2 favorite things from the show, but not necessarily... Well, one's a physical product, but my favorite thing I got so far was the commission from Ted McKeever, which is just insanely beautiful. I'll post pictures up online later.
Cool.
So, and then our interview that we got yesterday, that was a fanboy dream for me. But you want to explain that one? Or?
Oh, yeah, with Lance Henriksen and Bishop from the Aliens movies.
Yeah, writer of To Hell Your Ride, which regular listeners will know from about a year ago. I talked about that book a few times.
Yeah, amazing dude. He has a lot to talk about, and you just kind of are engaged with how his, it kind of like, he actually has a straight path of telling his stories, but it involves so much.
He is a magician when it comes to storytelling.
Actually, and, he was a magician.
Oh, he was a magician too, yeah. But no, like, and I tell you what, I could listen to that dude in that gravelly voice all freaking day, and it was just creepy.
He was gracious and gave you guys about a 30-minute interview.
Yeah.
So it could have gone been longer if we didn't say, hey, maybe you need to go back to your seat. But,
that's full on legit.
Yeah, but the greatest thing was one of the staff members that was with him when he was going back to his booth was talking to her saying, I really liked that interview. Those guys were like really knowledgeable. Like, that was one of the best interviews I've ever did. I enjoyed that so much. And like hearing that was like, that's badass.
Yeah,
and he went on for 20 minutes just saying how much he liked just talking to us. To me, that's probably one of my greatest accomplishments, I guess, whatever.
But Mom always tells you that she likes talking to you, too, so... No, that's awesome, you guys.
Mom's a liar.
That's cool.
All right, Tony, you got something for Indie Turnpike this week?
Yes, and this is something that I picked up here at the convention floor. You can get it right now for people in this room, or it will be in retail shops. You can get it online. It'll be in Comixology
yeah.
In a couple weeks. And it is Up the River. written by Travis McIntyre, pencils and inks by Stephen Sherrar, colors by Sean Seal, edited and lettered by Joshua Werner. Now, first off, we know all these people. So I can actually pronounce their names correctly.
Name dropper.
Well played.
If you listen to our show, sometimes we fudge on the names because we don't know how they're pronounced. I so was planning on just fucking them up on purpose. Yeah, but Wiener.
All right, so what's up the river about, Tom?
Up the river is... it's based around a river, and when it first started off, this isn't a diss, but it was one of those things of, all right, this is going to be a zombie book. Now, there's many zombie books out there. I'm still going to read it because it is, but then you're kind of getting a sense of, okay, this is the tone of this book. And when you see these, but then they're kind of like mutant-looking zombies, within the first page, you're getting this thing, and there's some fucking, like, gory-ass shit pages within here. Art is phenomenal, but when you're seeing shit getting, like, arms ripped off and heads...
And it starts at, like, night or something, and the color scheme is all blue and red, and it's real creepy.
Yeah, and you're realizing, okay, so there's these zombies type thing. And then they're on the river. And just them telling stories, kind of you're getting a sense of a lot of people don't like this river, a lot of people don't like traveling by it, a lot of people don't like this world, just from the stories that they're talking about. Sucks, someone falls in the river, and you find out, oh shit, that person turned into this zombie mutant thing. So the river is like the basis of this whole
river world. Styx?
Sure, yes. Okay. We can say that, but I'm not sure if that's what it is. And so you're kind of like, all right, so this is going to be kind of a survival horror type book. However, it changes its tone a bit when they get to a refuge. This riverboat man is talking about how he knows a place where they can sleep for the night. And there is the shaman. And who seems like one of the main characters is like saying, fuck, it's a changer. Now, to me, I'm like curious, ooh, what's a changer? That seems like interesting. Like, I already know the general sense of these mutant zombies are going to be, you know, hunting for brains or whatever. But
Tony, changers are people, when you give them a dollar, they'll give you four quarters. Changers.
I call them cashiers, but that's different. No, and so you get this person who is pretty much saying he's a god. He is a thing, but he is pretty much, it seems like his power is a teleporter. Don't know much more from reading this, but I'm like, okay, now I want to know how this person got the powers. How did this person get it? It actually explains it in there, and that, and what, I'm not going to spoil that for you guys, but once you find that out, you get a better sense of, holy shit, this is a great world that they're starting with. Now, this guy, when he first got there, was talking some shit about hating changers, and this changer goes, it wouldn't be good if I all of a sudden just teleported or manifested in your stomach, because your body can't handle that, and you're going to pop like a zit. Well, it's when there's going to execute someone that they show it on the fucking pages, wow. And you just see his head inside the guy. He teleported in and just blew the shit out of this guy. That sounded wrong, but
almost vulnerable.
Yeah, this river is pretty badass, and it's a great start of a book that's making me want to know more and more. I kind of think this guy's a dick, but I also, like, I want to have his powers, and there's got to be something more about him.
I'm not going to spoil anything, but you need to talk to Travis and talk to him about his inspiration for that book.
Well, if you'd like to hear Travis's inspiration for that book, you can check out 5 or 6 episodes ago, maybe a couple more, at anelegantweapon.ca. I had Travis and Steven on. We did a full hour, like full episode chat. Yeah. And we got into all that. And really cool guys, really cool inspirations and stories about the book. So,
really cool shameless plug.
And that's it. So, but no, we sat down. We had a good chat with those guys. They're good fellas.
They're fantastic guys. So. All right, Tony, I got some booze in the book this week.
What did you drink and what did you read?
What didn't I drink? That's the better question. But this week I have Injection, number 1 from Image Comics. And this book is written by Warren Ellis, art by Declan Shalvey, Jordy Bell Ayers, gorgeous colors as always. I am pairing this with Maker's Mark. Normally, you guys know when it comes to whiskey, I'm a Crown guy typically. But Maker's Mark is a Kentucky bourbon whiskey, and it's 90 proof, so 45% alcohol. And I'm pairing these because, honestly, both of them are, I think, true works of art. Just beautifully crafted the whole way around. And I injected the fuckload of Maker's Mark into my system this week. So, yeah, it's that simple. I would have come up with something more clever, but my brain cells are shot. So.
Yeah, that was pretty. Can I throw a quick Indy Turnpike?
There you go.
Even though we just jumped off it. A little book?
No, there's on-ramps and off-ramps, yeah. So we're good.
Okay, we're going to go off and then back on. We'll do a little clover leafing. We have clover leaves.
Okay.
Yeah. The Man with No Horse is the first attempt at a comic book by Nemesis Studios. It's written by Stan Konopka and drawn by Eric Blake. It's about a cursed, immortal cowboy
about
individual.
What's a
boot? We're going to play this game.
It's a boot.
Fucking Canadian.
Kind of a plagued, cursed, immortal entity that was once this cowboy man, and he's got to kind of wander the land trying to avenge and make up for kind of past curses and stuff. But it's a cool little shop. And you can get it at nemesisstudios.com, and it's cool.
All right. Tony, we didn't have any...
If you like horror western.
Tony, we didn't have any like best on tap top covers of the week, did we?
No, never
really. Were there any covers that Todd McFarlane did?
No.
All right, that's it for me, Tony.
Did he have any last calls?
I got a few. Although I'm going to be honest, I haven't got through the majority of my.
I'm going to be honest. I finally had the chance to read a couple comics right before recording. This whole week's been busy, so. I have other books I picked up. I can't fairly say yes or no on them right now because I don't know.
The ones that I was able to read that I enjoyed that I didn't mention, Run, Love, Kill issue 2 came out. Oh my god, that book is so much fucking fun. I've got Harrow County, which I still want to read from Dark Horse, Cullen Bunn and Tyler Crook. I was really hoping to get to that. Saga, fantastic as always. Chrononauts is just a shit ton of fun. I've got a stack of other things yet to read, but these are the ones I wanted to at least mention.
Cool. So, on behalf of Motor City Comic Con and Drunk on Comics, we want to thank Motor City Comic Con for their generosity in letting us come here again and record. And
their tolerance for us.
We had a really good panel yesterday about podcasting, and we're recording here today, so thank you to all the people who put on the show.
Yeah, and listeners at home, that panel will be posted next week while we take a hiatus and let our livers rest. So, Tony, do you guys have anything else?
No, I want to get back on the convention floor and have some fun.
All right, kids, keep reading your comics. We'll be back next week and talk to you more about them then. We'll see you.